You're listening to Pop Culture Fanatics, a podcast for the crazy fan in you. Going on, everybody, and welcome to another great edition of At the Movies, brought to you by Pop Culture Fanatics. This segment is dedicated to anything that has come out recently in the theaters or, in COVID times, streaming services. I'm your host, Val Siskel, and alongside me, I have a collective bunch of individuals who have great opinions about this specific movie we're about to review. We have, all the way from Anxiety and I've, Mr. Jacob. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing fantastic. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays, all my good people out there. How you doing?
Fantastic. Yes, happy holidays to the world. It is post-Christmas, post-holiday season. Right now, we're about to start the new year and start it funky fresh. Always with me as well, too, the co-host of the Kimura Chronicles and Elite Wrestling Audio, the host of the Lag Switch Gaming Podcast, and of course, my ride or die co-host today as well, too, Mr. Jay Rance. How you doing?
I'm good, man. Happy holidays, everybody. I'm chilling.
That is the most energetic I have heard you in quite some time, sir. So I'm very happy about that.
Thank you, sir.
And what brings us all together? Well, a specific movie has just dropped on Christmas Day, both on streaming services and the theaters around the United States. And we're talking about Wonder Woman 84. For those that don't know what that movie is, Wonder Woman 84 is an American superhero film based on DC Comics character Wonder Woman. It is a sequel to 2017's Wonder Woman and the ninth installment in the DC Extended Universe. The film is directed by Patty Jenkins from the script that's written by Geoff Johns and David Callahan. Based on the story by Geoff Johns itself, starring Gal Gadot as Diana Prince, Wonder Woman, and of course Chris Pine, Kristen Wiig, Pedro Pascal, amongst others as well too. This movie was supposed to debut on June of 2020, but because of COVID-19 and the pandemic around the world, it was later revealed on HBO streaming services that this would be their premiere show to drop in December, as well as in theaters as well too. So guys, let's get down to the nitty gritty. When you guys first heard that we were going to get that Wonder Woman 84 sequel, I'm going to throw it to Jake first. Jake, how did you feel about Wonder Woman getting a sequel and it being in the 80s?
I was curious. I was very curious, especially because I guess a lot of people would consider Wonder Woman the most successful of the most recent DC Universe movies. I felt like it deserved it, and especially in the 80s. I'm not too familiar with Wonder Woman and her comics and her series and, you know, her story. So I loved a lot of the other period pieces that we've got with, you know, with Marvel. But with DC, I wanted to see what how they would do it in the 80s. I mean, you know, the nostalgia is already there, especially with a show like Stranger Things having done very well with like that 80s scene. So I was really curious to see like how they were going to take it and if they were going to actually utilize the 80s atmosphere of it. So I was excited, but more curious.
Okay. Bringing it over to you, Jake. Ooh. Same question goes to you.
I mean, after the success that the first one had, I was kind of excited. And then anything 80s, I fucking love, from the music to the style, everything, the games, everything. So I was kind of excited and super intrigued. I was like, oh, okay, we're going to the 80s, 84. So I was with it. There was one more caveat that I wanted to touch. I just totally forgot. It was something about that Jake said. But I was intrigued. I was intrigued from the bat.
Yeah, man. Same here. When I first saw that trailer and we're getting the Duran Duran in the beginning of the movie, all distorted, the 80s nostalgia just hitting you in the face. And of course,
Even the logo
itself as well, too. It definitely had a presence. It was like, okay, we're here to rock the world. And I was super excited for it. I'm very hot in the first film, even though I will say this. I'm going to pose this question to you guys as well, too. The DCEU has had a lot of criticism over the years. Even their most successful movies like Wonder Woman and Aquaman have been compared to more successful movies in the Marvel Universe. You take Wonder Woman at base, and it could almost look like a carbon copy of Captain America, the first Avenger. Especially with the scenes with the army going into no man's land or whatnot. Even though they're two separate wars, they get a lot of... I guess parallels to both movies, and the same thing with Aquaman looking like a version of Black Panther just underwater. Do you guys feel the same with that, or do you think that these movies stand by themselves and are great by themselves? They don't need to be compared to Marvel movies whatsoever. Whoever wants to take it.
I think they're always going to get the comparisons because there's similarities, but I think both MCU, DCU have phenomenal lores on their own, and it should just be appreciated from both angles and should not be compared, in my opinion. So that's just where I stand at. I think they're both phenomenal lores. So, I mean, but you're always going to get the comparisons, though.
About you, Jake?
Yeah, no. I to be honest, you know, I hate that, you know, that people do continue to compare these, but you know, I felt like that has always been the case with going all the way back to, you know, just the comics themselves. I felt like there was always going to be, there's always been that comparison between, you know, these characters in DC and these characters in Marvel, and you know where they stand up against each other. But that was fun, you know, that's a fun thing to do. But when it comes to, I guess, like, you know, the cinema and, you know, actually seeing the stuff come to life, I think that we should be able to pull them apart and appreciate them for what they are and, you know, what they've been able to achieve, because being able to see it as we are now is just fascinating. because, you know, it's literally the pages are coming to life here. But again, I think that's just what fanboys do. I think that's what they're going to continue to do. But it's going to take away, and I think by constantly comparing them to each other, we're going to oversee and overlook and miss a lot of the things that are done right, especially because, and unfortunately, DC is getting the most of the flack. But when you really look at it, I mean, DC... it's doing a lot of things different. You know, it's literally got its own color. Let's be real about that. You know, it's got its own vibe. And I think that we need to start looking at it from that perspective and tear it apart by its own faults and not by comparison to what has already been done with Marvel. There's just a huge difference of that. And I think that needs to be separated. But is that going to happen?
No. Well, even if you look at it too, like DC specifically has almost like 13 to 15 years ahead in the movies, in the movie industry, than Marvel. You know, DC, you know, started off, you know, even if you go back in time with Batman, even Superman, the television series happening in the 30s and 40s, they've always had their stamp in the film industry or the TV industry. And even in films, you have, you know, Christopher Reeve's Superman from the 70s going on to the 80s, and then the Tim Burton Batmans from 89 all the way up to there. You know, Marvel tried their best at first to, you know, put their foot in, but unsuccessfully, with like bad versions of Spider-Man or bad versions of the Fantastic Four in the 90s, a bad version of Captain America on a motorcycle with like an invisible shield. You know, all these things were happening. The most successful project I could say was probably their Incredible Hulk series from the 70s. But other than that, like it took Marvel to get to
Disney.
No, I wouldn't say that. No, 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 because there's still some gems. Like Blade is an incredible movie. I think that's the start of their success. Blade was an incredible movie right off the bat. You know, Spider-Man was an incredible movie. Spider-Man 2 was an incredible movie as well, too. The X-Men series, for what it's worth, they're landmarks. But at its core, DC always had their finger on the pulse. Currently, though, I will say, I appreciate your guys' opinion on it. I'm a little back and forth on it, because when you're looking at a combined universe, I do feel that DC's a little late to the game and are still trying to figure out what they're doing with a combined universe. And I also feel that there's too many cooks in the kitchen trying to control this larger-than-life universe rather than Marvel having one specific person with their vision ahead. Do I feel that there's a comparison between those movies? Not necessarily. I honestly feel that Wonder Woman, the first one, is better than Captain America, First Avenger. I appreciate that movie. I appreciate, you know, Johann Schmidt, but, you know, Rogers. I appreciate it, but as a movie itself, as a whole, I think there's much more layers in Wonder Woman, from Themyscira and the Amazons to the Greek mythology that's in that movie, to even, you know, man meeting woman for the first time in a way, with Diana's character in that movie just being so curious with a man how they look, to No Man's Land, that perfect scene of her marching through the war. I think that movie is just leaps and bounds ahead of Captain America, the First Avenger. That's just my opinion. And then, of course, Aquaman. I love Aquaman for what it is. Like, it gave me fan service more than Black Panther did, unfortunately.
I agree. Ocean Master was everything.
Every day. You give me Ocean Master with his crown and the red eyes and the what is it? The haka dance with fucking with Jason Momoa. He's everything. Jake, I know you had some points. Go ahead. I apologize for cutting you off.
No. You weren't. I was just gonna chime in. It's like, yeah, we got Johann Smith and fucking Captain America, but in Wonder Woman, we got Old Man Ares.
Okay, maybe that's the low point of the movie. But
yeah, I enjoyed Old Man Ares.
That was the only thing that killed it for me. Like, him as a villain himself, like, yeah, it was cool. But, like, when he became Ares, or when he turned out to be Ares, like, he didn't even morph into, like, this younger, hotter version. All I saw was, like, this big mustache popping out from his armor, bro. And I'm just like, what the hell is happening?
That was his down point, because he didn't transform into a hot Ares war of God.
He was just, my man, Lenny Kilmeister, Motorhead, Mun chops with this Greek armor on. Exactly. It was great. You know what? It was weird, but I still appreciate it, though. I appreciate it more than Johann Smith getting taken away from a Tesseract, and we'll never see him again until fucking Infinity War. Natasha. Clint. You go over there. You talk to the man in the cloak. Like, that's what we get. All right, before we get on a tangent about those movies right here, we're here to talk about Wonder Woman 84. All right, first things first, before we even get into the movie, let's talk about the trailer. Guys, did the trailer captivate you? I know we saw a lot in the trailers. We saw different trailers. We saw the villain of this movie with Pedro Pascal. Very... very weird, but I do like the Maxwell Lord character, especially in the trailers. You got to see him as this, like, very 80s tycoon. I think they captured that awesome in the trailers. Like, this, you know, the greed, the excess of the 80s, you know, more is everything. And that really encapsulates what the 80s was. Greed, you know, the promise of more and more, more this, more that, you know, consumerism in a way. So I got that from the trailers. We didn't get to see Cheetah in all her glory until, like, the final trailers, but I gotta ask you guys, like, did the trailers take you out a little bit? Were you more intrigued after watching the trailers?
Okay, you go first.
Yes and no. I felt like the trailers were kind of hot and cold. Like you said, we saw Cheetah towards the end, so I was kind of sold with that. Always was hot and cold because it was Kristen Wiig. You know, I know her just for straight up comedy, so just seeing her in this serious role, but I was kind of excited to see it. I was like, all right, cool, yeah, nailed it. You know, it's pretty dope in my opinion. Like you said, the tycoon, Lord Maxwell. I mean, Maxwell, yeah, Lord. They captivated that. I mean, the biggest selling point for me was, like, the whole riding the lightning. So that just kind of threw me off. If I had to sit here and say that the trailer kind of threw me off, I think it was that. but overall, I mean, once I saw, you know, 84, then I saw the trailer, I was like, all right, you're doing a good job of captivating me. I was even excited when they showed the little caveat of, you know, young Diana running around in the Greek Olympics and Themyscira. So I was like, all right, I'm with that, you know? So, but it did a good job to captivate me, though. I won't lie. How do you feel, Jake?
About you, Jake.
To be honest, I don't really have much to chime in on this because I think I didn't watch the trailers for the specific reason that, you know, because, you know, I had saw the the pre-screening for it. So when the trailer came out, I didn't really pay attention too much to it because I was like, oh.
Okay. Yeah, I wanted to mention that as well too. You got a chance to see this in a pre-screening. It was with people as well too, right? This is before COVID, so you got to see this with your audience. I'll ask you this a little later. How it translates to an audience point of view, but definitely that's a one up right there. Having that audience together in that one unison moment of cheering for Diana, I felt like that with Wonder Woman itself. So I can imagine how that was for part two. Myself, like I was, you know, I was back and forth. Like I feel like this is just me though. I feel like the 80s have been done to death just a little bit. In every setting, as much as I love being nostalgic and going back to the 80s for certain things, Stranger Things or whatnot, I also feel like maybe we could experiment a little bit more with different things. That's why I appreciate about Wonder Woman 1 a lot, is that we didn't get into World War II. Mm-hmm. We got into World War One, like the war that people really don't talk about that much. And, you know, they really explored so much tension in that movie that I felt like this specific movie, I would have probably appreciated if it was in the 60s or 70s, like doing something a little bit different. I think I would have had a little bit more fun seeing Diana, because she's such a fashionista, being in the 60s with polka dot dresses and whatnot in that era, you know, Austin Powers heating up a little bit, you know, just trying to see what would happen there, or in the 70s as well too. Like, I think me, myself, I would have been happier with that. But with the 80s, I was kind of a little thrown off, but, you know, nonetheless, I'm excited for it. I was actually hyped about the lightning part, because in my headcanon, we talked about this before we did the podcast, Jay, that I have a habit of writing movies in my head. So I'm thinking, like, my expectation goes through the roof, because I'm like, oh, okay, fuck it, she's riding lightning, that means she has the power of Zeus, or Zeus is helping her out or something, like he's like directing her. That's the only fucking logical reason why she would ride lightning, right? Because, you know, she's part of Greek mythology in a way. And I was sorely disappointed, we'll get into that later. But I was hot and cold on it, so, but I was ready for Wonder Woman. Go ahead, Jake.
The thing about that, the 80s though, is it's so easy, and that may be one of the reasons why it did, because one, nostalgia, but two, like the 80s, I mean, yes, there's every decade that we talk about, you know, has its moments and its characteristics, but there's just something about the 80s that's just easy to replicate, and as soon as you see it, you feel it and you know it.
Isn't that a cop out though, a little bit? Like,
no, that's what I'm saying. I want to say that that's probably one of the reasons why they did it. You know, again, I don't know, especially because this has to, I guess the time frame has to tie into its main antagonist here, which is Maxwell Lord. So I don't exactly know what his relevance to the timeline is, or, you know, especially when it comes to the comics. So I'm not really too sure about that. But again, I think that may be one of the reasons why they did it. Again, because just, it's like you said, it's a cop out. It's fucking easy. You can easily do the 80s, especially when everybody's doing it right now.
And I only say that because you took another, you know, A class, you know, female superhero like Captain Marvel, and her movie, even though, like, I have a little bit of criticism for that movie, you know, they dropped you into the 90s. And I feel like even with the 90s have not got the due it deserves in cinema. And I feel like for the most part, they captured the 90s in the best way possible. A little cheesy, in my opinion, in that movie. But, you know, looking at things like Blockbuster or Radio Shack warms my fucking heart all the time. You know, you throw a Circuit City in there, we're all good. But, you know, the 80s, I feel like it's so easy to capture all that nostalgia that's going to draw anybody in there. Now, maybe I was just expecting a little bit more risk involved. Jay, do you have anything about the 80s, or maybe just being shot in the 80s that you want to talk about?
Well, I mean, I'm all for the 80s, but I do understand the points you guys are making, that it's kind of like a cheap cop-out, since it's very easy to replicate, and it's very easy for people to just fall in love with the nostalgia feeling and reminisce, like, you know, like, oh, I remember that, going to the arcades and stuff like that. I just know me, you know, I just take different, so maybe they probably went the 80s route because of the cameo scene we got at the end, kind of to explore, because, you know, Wonder Woman was big in the 70s, the last episode, I believe, was 1979, so in a way, because of the cameo at the end, it kind of leads into, like, I guess, you know, after that, you feel me, you get what I'm trying to say, like, after the final episode, this is what she did in the 80s and stuff like that. So I'm sure the 80s timeline has to do something with the cameo in some way, somehow.
All right, so let's get into this right here. Let's start about the good spots of this movie. We won't go beat by beat because we want everybody to go and watch that. But let's go into it. Let's get into spoiler territory. Whoever's listening right now, we're gonna be talking about spoilers. So if you guys don't want to hear it right now, go watch the movie. Come back to us. We're gonna have a great time just revealing some little tidbits about the movie. In about a 3, 2, 1. Okay, I'll start off first. My favorite parts of this movie, honestly, are the beginning, the first like 15-20 minutes of this movie, because I absolutely love going back to Themyscira, Paradise Island. I love seeing the characters. I love seeing the Amazons in all their glory, especially in their little games that they're doing as well too. Mm-hmm. A young Diana, fucking very determined. You saw that in commercial. Jay, you pointed that out so great, that was a driving force for little girls to go watch this movie, in my opinion. And looking at this right here, and although the CGI is a little wonky for my taste, like there's some parts with like baby Diana that she's doing like backflips. I'm like, well, that didn't look as clean as possible, but it's okay. I enjoyed the shit out of it. I enjoyed the determination. I enjoyed the immaturity of cheating or trying to skeet by, and probably using her youth as an excuse. Well, I'm smaller than everybody, so why should I do like everybody? I have my own way of doing things. And just the life lessons she learns within that 15 to 20 minutes. I think that's one of my favorite scenes or parts of this movie. What about you guys?
Yeah. No, go ahead, Jay.
Go ahead, Jay. All right. what I think the beginning captures is also the brilliance of the director, Patty Jenkins. Because there's very few female directors out there that are able to create these in, I guess, pop culture's eyes, these masterpieces. With this direction, as you saw, like look at how well it's portrayed with the Amazons and how well they're doing for themselves, and you know how much they're leaning on each other, but at the same time, you know, challenging each other. You know, it's like the Olympics for the women, you know, there. But I love the acting with the other contestants in that. You know, again, it's especially at the end when the one girl who the one woman who does succeed at the end, like her satisfaction in her face and the applause from everyone else and you know, the celebration, and then I guess kind of like the heartbreak from that little girl is fantastic on her own, as far as like being able to encapsulate those emotions and stuff, especially, you know, in a scenario like that which speaks high volumes in real life. I think this beginning is very well for just showing you the brilliance of the direction from Patty Jenkins herself, and I think that's why that was a very, very strong opening.
But
excuse me, oh no, I thought he was gonna add another caveat. Yeah, I agree with you that was a phenomenal selling point in the trailer, and I was kind of hype. You know, I just didn't build myself up too much like you did, because I know you kind of build yourself up too much, but I did enjoy the intensity of it, bro, from the cheering of the crowd, you know, seeing these women's kind of encouraging themselves, but yet trying to fight for that mantle of the golden armor, you know, and then just not giving little Diana any fucking slack whatsoever. You know, they just looked at her as a regular competitor, like a full-grown woman. And I enjoyed that. I did enjoy the life lessons, like you said, towards the end, where she was about to throw the spear through the hoop and fucking Shorty just grabbed her up like, uh-uh, you cheated. Like,
Robin Wright, man.
Jenny.
You know, she grabbed her up, and just because, like you said, that's a little immaturity. You saw that. You saw the intensity, but you still saw that she wasn't ready for what the greatness that she was, you know, going to be. So I enjoyed it. I enjoyed that scene. I wish I would have seen a little bit more. I fucking enjoyed one of the Amazonians getting their little Wild Wild West on, jumping through the lasso. And then,
yes!
I'm like, girl, do you think? So,
all right, let me say this right here, because me, this is what I want, and I'm not sure if anybody else wants this, but I don't after watching this movie, and I won't go into ahead of things, but I personally don't want a Wonder Woman 3. I want a Paradise Island or a Themyscira movie. Like, set it there. We already know what happens to the Amazons. Well, I don't think Jay, you haven't seen Justice League yet, so I won't spoil that right there. But there's a big moment that happens in Justice League with the Amazons. And I, for one, just don't care to get to that point later on in the future. I'd rather go back in the past and explore Paradise Island than Mascara. I want to explore the Amazons. I want to explore the culture. I want a whole movie based on that. Is that too much for me to ask, or would you guys be interested in that too?
I don't know, because here's the thing, I love Robin Wright as Aniel. Is that how you say it? Aniel?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Antia. With just the, especially here, with just the very small moment that we have her, look at how powerful she is and how much she makes her presence known. And the thing is, I feel like if we create a movie based on that, it kind of loses that, because Diana relies a lot on her memory to keep her strong. You know, she consistently thinks about these things and the lessons that she learns. And when we get just small glimpses of that, it just shows like how powerful it is. And I feel like if we see too much of it, it will kind of lose its touch in the future. So that's my feelings on that. So I wouldn't be all up for that. And because it's great on its own, and I think we will continue to see that, but in increments. Because, and that's the thing, like when you feed too much, when you have too much on your plate, then you get bored of it, or you just don't want to finish it. But when you start getting these little small pieces, you start putting together things in your head on your own, and it makes it more fascinating that way. At least it does for me.
Yeah. Okay. No, that's a great point. I agree. I'm just going to hit it off with the mainstream media. Would people actually be intrigued to see something like that? Could they grasp the concept? Because, you know, not to throw no shade to anybody listening or the people out there that go to the movies, sometimes, you know, they just go based off of what they see. They really don't deep dive into the lore as we do, or understand the lore and stuff like that. So I'm just looking at it, would that capture somebody enough to be like, all right, for somebody that's maybe not into the Wonder Woman lore like that. But I mean, I would be all for it. But then Jake makes a phenomenal point. You know, it would just oversaturate this mystique that we have of the Mascara, where, you know, like Jake said, she relies on that. Those were very impactful years for her and stuff like that. So it's good where it's at, in my opinion, because it's just like, I don't want to say it's bigger than Wonder Woman, but it fuels her, you know. So like Jake said,
I can agree to your points as well too, and I can also disagree on some levels as well, because you take a place like Wakanda, and Wakanda was shot mostly all in that movie. Mm-hmm. You had tidbits going back to the United States and here and there and whatnot, but you know, you got to see the landscape of Wakanda, the culture, what motivates each character in there. And you know, it is done with excellent performances from a whole bunch of people in that movie, but I think you could still capture the Mascara in a Wakanda-like atmosphere. You don't even have to really work with Diana at that point. You could do pre-Diana. You could do, so many stories of the Amazonians, especially that first war as well too, where they're trying to escape from man's clutches and have their own society. Like, I personally would be invested in that, but I could also see what you guys are saying isn't marketable to a mainstream audience. Maybe in an HBO series, maybe a small, limited 4-part series.
Yeah. Okay, I can get with that, but then that also kind of just loops all the way back to your original point in the conversation. It's like you just did.
I was gonna say that you just compared it to Black Panther to
Marvel, bro. So like now, then if Wonder Woman were to do this, if DC were to do this, that's exactly what's going to happen, man. It's just going to be like, well, here we go. We have Wakanda Part 3.
All right. Let's just take a different IP out of it. Jurassic Park, totally different. The whole focus of Jurassic Park is in the park itself, right? So you're seeing all of the marvels, the craziness of Jurassic Park in there. They're not moving from different island to island. That first movie is just specifically there in that park, besides the first 10 minutes of the movie.
I mean, I'm all for the HBO series. Give me a Mandalorian side series, 8 episodes, one shot, boom, the Mascara, like that. That's phenomenal. That's good. I think it would just be too much it would saturate the island. It would just be too much because, I mean, remember, we're living in a time age where people were conflicted with Captain Marvel. People were conflicted with Rey and stuff like that.
Actually,
so to see an island that's just straight women empowerment, bro, that would be a tough pill to swallow for a lot of people nowadays.
Yeah, but yeah, you know what though? Thinking about it more, it might actually work. It really could, especially with like a HBO type mm-hmm. series. But like giving us all new characters, you know, or at least, because I'm gonna take it back to like an idea like Better Call Saul, where it works as a prequel, and it has proven itself as a prequel. So if you were to go on a prequel route, but doing it right with just like a slow build up to what we already know, but kind of base and focus on, you know, the strives and struggles of creating this land and making it livable, but like still living into that fear until they got to that point, until they were comfortable, you know, like watch that unfold. And again, you know, bring that lore to life, that mythology lore. That's something that hasn't been around for a while. The last time that we got that, I mean, Jesus Christ, like I would say like probably like 300 or fucking Beowulf, God forbid, Troy. You know, like look at all those disasters, you know, with that mythology, you know. I guess the idea of the mascara and Wonder Woman has the ability to bring that back to life, but in a way that it can only work.
I mean, you can do it. Sorry for cutting you off, Jake. I mean, you can do it easily. Explore HBO Max, like you said, explore the lore of the Golden Armor. Who was this golden warrior that was, you know, like the most phenomenal warrior for them? They have points that they could do that. Like you said, just pre-Diana, do it like that, revolve around the golden eagle armor, and that's it. And just like a short series, and it would work, in my opinion.
Okay. I love those ideas right there. I think we could all pitch that. I think they could be winners in my book. But I want to hear, you know, your winning or crying achievements of this movie. Let's go with you, Jay, first.
Ooh, my.
I want to hear what you liked about this movie. What are your favorite parts?
Well, I did love my son Pedro Pascal. I got Tommy Vercetti. I got Tommy Vercetti vibes, like you said. You know, I got that creeper, that Moogle, like you said. In the 80s, more. I did enjoy that. I thought his performance was a shining spot for me. You know, I did enjoy that, just to see him kind of like, I don't want to say like with great power comes great responsibility, but he just started spiraling out of control with these wishes and more the greed. You saw that greed, you know, take over. And we've seen it in real life, you know, greed sometimes take over people. So you just saw him. And then just fucking up with his son every time, royally with his son in front of him. Oh, I got him again, Alistair. Like, bro, that I enjoyed everything about him. And so that at the end, just, you know, I mean, it did deliver a bad message, in my opinion, like I told you off the podcast, where it was like, okay, you could just be the most biggest scumbag in the world, but you'll always have love at the end. You know, just sit here and say you're sorry or renounce your wish and you're good. So, like, but I did enjoy him. I did enjoy Kristen Wiig. I thought we did get that, as we've seen in past movies, you know, we've seen it in Megamind and in other movies where you just get the dumb, geeky person. Not dumb, but you get the geeky, nerdy person that's always overshadowed, overlooked, and they come into power, they become the creeper. I did enjoy that evolution from her. I did enjoy seeing her in that 80s workout suit. So, like, I did enjoy that. I also did enjoy the like I told you off the podcast, where she became Cheetah, like when she wished, like you just saw her embody that ferocity of what this character is, that goes toe to toe, just bare hands with Diana. And you just saw her in the plane, like, I don't want to be like nobody else. I want to be an apex predator, something that's never been seen before. So that was phenomenal. I did enjoy it. I was like, ooh. And my crowning moment has to be Chris Pine, bro. I did like his little innocence that he brought to the movie. I think that was the heart of the movie for me, in my opinion. And I think a lot of people like that, just to see him, you know, come back into this time frame and stuff like that. So those were shining moments for me of the movie.
Okay. I can see that. Maxwell Lord, bro. Maxwell Lord, you know, his original inception was in 1987, and he definitely was like this tycoon businessman. He didn't really get powers until like later on to the 90s, where he had like manipulation powers, and like kind of like more so being an empath in a way as well too. Like, he could sense feelings and control feelings as well too. But for the most part, like, he's very much like this business 80s American psycho tycoon. So, you know, I think he captured that.
He has the most body stage name though, from Lorenzo. What was it? From Maxwell Lorenzo to Maxwell Lord? I'm like, that the most body stage name ever, bro.
I like that his accent was pretty prevalent in this movie. It's not like, you know, he was very much trying to hide it whatsoever. He very much was there, like, broken English at points, but it just fits the 80s in a way where, like,
anybody can make it.
I think that's what shines this
movie. Yeah, I did enjoy it, and he was a shining caveat for me. But what about you, Jake? What did you enjoy about the movie?
I think the one major thing that I did enjoy was the parts of emotion that was the goal and that was the aim, that it totally worked. Again, you know, going back to what you said, it was that relationship with his son. The moment, spoilers, the moment that, you know, you go to the son, literally out in the cold world, out in the world that's just, like, you know, gone haywire, and he's alone and he's watching him alone. Like, that was, like, probably one of the most impactful moments of that movie, and honestly my favorite part, bro, because that, you know, watching it in the pre-screen and watching it now, like, I felt the exact same thing the moment I first, you know, watched it. That shit was deep. That shit was real heavy, you know what I mean? And I think that was done very right, and I think that was done with a very fresh direction of eyes. Going back to the director, Patty Jenkins, you know, to be able to direct that and create that scene was just phenomenal. and of course, you know, the emotion that Diana felt, that she realized, like, who she was talking to, you know, that she was talking to Steve, like, that was very powerful. You know, so a lot of the emotion that was there, that was present in the movie, I thought was done very well. As you know me, I'm a sucker for emotion. I'm a sucker for that reality that is true, something that we can feel, something that's beyond, I guess, that humanness in the movie about a superhero. You know, I love that. I love humanity. So that was done very well. I like what you said about Chris Pine and his innocence. You know, he's that little innocent heartbeat in the movie, and it truly is. He doesn't really have an overbearing role in the movie, honestly. Like, he's just there. He's literally just like Diane's teddy bear that she takes everywhere,
which he is in the comics as well too.
I felt like that was done. Yeah, I don't think that was forced. I felt like that was, I guess, the message. That's ultimately what I'm leading to. It took me to the second time to realize, like, the message and the whole point of this movie, because I kept wondering, like, you know, it kind of seemed so out of place compared to the first one. But then, you know, you have the message that stands from the very beginning into why that opening exists, which is, I guess, Diana literally getting lost in her own mind and losing her way. Mm-hmm. And this, what this movie is just totally about her. It took me to the second time to watch it to realize it and see that. But now that I have, I realize, like, yeah, that was done very well. So that is my favorite part of the movie. Mm-hmm.
I agree with you. Sorry for cutting you off, Frank. Val, excuse me. Apologize.
I like it. I like both ways.
that was one thing that I did. That's why I kind of gravitated to that, because, like Jake said, it's just kind of like her teddy bear. She carries him all around. He's just like really there lingering, you know, like, but it works linger. So well, you know, because that time he does come through for her, like when he saved her and stuff with the tin. I don't want to get too much into details, but, you know, like, and then when she was capturing Maxwell, and he just came through with the tin when they started shooting at her, knowing that she's already debilitated because she's losing power and stuff like that, and he just saved her there. Also, one part that I found hilarious was he was like, okay, let's go this way, and then the gate was closed and he saw the lock. He was like, well, have at it, because I ain't gonna do nothing.
They ain't gonna catch me with my hands on.
So I did enjoy that. That was the heartbeat, honestly.
Can we talk about the most underrated performance of the movie? You know, when I look at this character, I'll just say this. I'm not comparing her performance in any way to the likes of Heath Ledger, but I will say that her performance going into this movie reminds me of Heath Ledger in a way where you get a character actor who is mainly known for doing one style of acting in a way. And she delivers, or this person delivers a performance that to me is just stunning. I remember Heath Ledger got a lot of flack when he was announced to be the Joker for Dark Knight. It was just like disparaging remarks, yada, 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 left and right. Do I feel that Kristen Wiig got the same kind of flack? Not necessarily, but I think people were very hesitant to see what she was going to bring to the character of Barbara and to see what she could do with the Cheetah character. I absolutely love her performance. She is so into this character with maybe hints of comedy, but the comedy is not overbearing whatsoever. It just, it accentuates her character. She's a nervous wreck. So she uses comedy to kind of, you know, get away from that nervous and anxiety. You know, I think we could all relate to that in a certain way. Like some, like me myself, when I get nervous, I make a joke just to make myself feel a little bit more comfortable around the area. You see that with her character as well too, and how methodical and crazy she does get. Crazy for power. I think where the 80s and the excess of power, kind of the heartbeat of this movie, the theme of this movie, is really with her as well too, of wanting more and always feeling like you're underwhelmed or underappreciated. And now you have a chance to show people what you have. You're not going to get rid of it whatsoever. You're not going to leave the limelight. You're not going to say no to power whatsoever. It's always going to be a yes. It's always going to be more. So I think she was the perfect, like, B to A with Pedro Pascal's character. I think they mesh so well. I even got to the part where she's like so confident in her abilities, where she's in the office and she's basically the most popular girl in town. It gave me Michelle Pfeiffer vibes from Batman Returns as Catwoman.
Now that we're talking about it, I can see it and I can open my mind to it, but like, that is exactly what I had in my mind when I was watching it. And I guess that was the only thing that was disappointing to me, because it wasn't new. Like, it's always been done. Maybe it's just been so long that it's been done like this. Going back to what you said, because, you know, you're right. When I watched her character, especially at the beginning, like, I saw myself a lot. And one of the most powerful lines that fucking just made me just, like, kind of cringe, but it, like, in a good way, was when she looked at Diana, and the delivery was just perfect, spot on. And she just said, "Thanks for talking to me." Like, that was like everything, especially as a gay man who always feels very underwhelming in the gay world when I'm surrounded by all these just fucking beautiful bodies and beautiful people. And like, you know, like this gay charisma that I just don't have, you know what I mean? I've always felt like that. You know what I mean? I've never felt like eyes were ever on me, and, you know, always felt like the outcast. So like, seeing this character, I can definitely understand, you know, that point of, I have something now. I have something that people want, you know? Like, I don't say I want more, but you know what I mean? Like, it's very, again, it ties into that humanity in the movie that intrigues me, that encapsulates me, and, you know, what made this something very, very, very likable in this movie.
But no, I agree. She was a shining moment for me as well, like you said, because we've all been there, you know, hearing Jake's story. We've all been there where we're just like, sometimes we feel alone in the world. Like, people don't sit here and just talk to you or look at you. Like, that I kind of went through that when I was in high school. I was just a loner and shit like that. So, you know, I sympathize with this character. And then just seeing her, you know, just become this bombshell of a woman, and you saw the transformation slowly but surely. Like, everything. She started walking in heels. She started looking sexy, wearing dresses. The guys just groveling at her feet, and things like that. So, and like you said, she's comedic. So for me, I was like very critical on her, because we know she's comedic, but then she also showed her diversity, which that to me makes you a phenomenal, phenomenal fucking actor when you could just take multiple roles like that. And she knocked it out the park, man. She knocked it out the park, in my opinion.
1,000%. Like, you know, me as an uber nerd that can pull Godzilla quotes out of his ass left and right, it's kind of hard to like really capture a conversation with a random person with that knowledge in my head. So when you're like, to see her and how she's so invested with archaeology and stones and, you know, different sites and whatnot, the lore of it, and some people are just like, why are you talking to me? Like, I can relate to that as well, too. Just being out of place in the world where you don't fit in whatsoever. And her moments with Diane, I feel like, I'll say it, I feel like she stole the scenes from her. I feel like she...
I think pre-Cheetah.
She... There's scenes where they first meet, mm-hmm. you know, when she drops all the paperwork, and I feel like she just steals the scene right there from Diana Prince, from Gal Gadot. I think the times where when they meet up in the Oval, not the Oval Office, the White House itself, and they have that fight, I still feel like she shines brighter than Gail whatsoever. And even toward the end, like, as Cheetah as well too, I love her character. Is she a little too OP for my taste? A tad bit, but I, you know, she is the Joker to Batman for Wonder Woman, so I need to feel like she's on par, if not she has more of an edge against Wonder Woman. So I can love that. I can deal with that.
I think they both work well. Sorry for cutting you off, Jake. Excuse me. I think they both work well because she was kind of like that sympathizer, you know, for noticing her, like when she was like, oh. When she noticed her, thank you for talking to me, she said, we could do early dinner, you know? So I think it worked well, because then that's when, like, Diana dropped her guard and she started talking about Chris and stuff like that. So to me, they worked well, but she definitely did fucking outshine her as a badass when in the White House and they started scrapping. So from the moment she laid the kick on her, I was like, ooh, okay, you've arrived, you know? So that...
Or even the part, not to cut you off, but like that part where she sees the mugger or the sexual harasser for a second time, and she just obliterates this dude to the homeless man. Is like, what are you doing over there?
Bro, that's when you know she was full-blown badass, because like 15 minutes into the movie, she was bringing them hot dinner, and over here, mind your business. Yeah.
I was waiting for him to get kicked too. I was like, oh no, don't do it to my man.
For real.
Oh, all right. So we got her out the way.
One thing I want to say, and I don't know if it's going to lead into like our next conversation. I guess the only thing that really bothered me, again, because I don't know the Wonder Woman lore, I don't know the universe, but it's just like, I guess the transformation into Cheetah, like it still boggles my mind, because I'm like, okay, so suddenly she's a cat.
I mean,
like, did the stone really do that? Like, is the anger, the fury from all the people, is that really what did that to her? Like, I guess that was the only thing that I was just like, oh, okay, like now she's got a tail. Like, what the fuck?
I think that played out so well for me, because from the lore, which I don't want to, you know, probably spoil another subject matter that we will talk about, the whole lore of Cheetah, how she got her powers, you know, it kind of did translate well in a way for me, because, you know, when Maxwell Lord was saying everybody's rage, everybody's fury, everybody's, you know, give it to her and stuff like that. So to me, it just made me think about some real life shit, because, you know, we're in 2020. We've seen people, even before 2020, we've seen people on Black Friday scrap for a Tickle Me Elmo. We've seen this primal animalistic instinct come out in people. So when he said transfer all that rage into her and stuff like that, that's why I think we got the transformation of the fur, the tail. You know, it was just that apex predator that she wanted to be. It was just all those emotions racked up into one. That's what I think.
You make great points. We've seen people in 2020 kill each other. So I agree wholeheartedly with you right there, bro. You know, with the trans, there's been four different iterations of Cheetah in the comic books. The Dr. Minerva character is the one that we're trying to base it off right now. And with her character, she's basically like female Indiana Jones in the comic books. She's basically just a little bit more cockier and a little bit more of a bitch as well, too. So slight differences right there in what we've seen in the film. And of course, the way that she actually does get the power, which I feel like if they would have went this route in the comic books, it would have got compared to Black Panther really quickly, because she actually goes to Africa. She actually finds this potion.
Oh, okay.
It's actually one of the iterations that's a potion, and she drinks the potion and she gets all the powers of like that tribe's guardian, which is like, you know, as fast as Cheetah, as strong as a lion and things of that nature. So that's what happens with her character in the comics. So I can imagine if we did that with movies, it kind of be a little too reminiscent of the flower that's being in Black Panther. Just a tad bit.
I agree with you.
Mm, So this works, and you know, your explanation like really makes a lot more sense. It's really based on that fury and animal rage that, you know, humans get succumbed to. So good job. Makes sense now.
I could throw a little shade on something. So as you know, I'll throw one shade on the character. Spoiler alert as well too. It makes no sense for her character, even though we don't hear it, for her to recant her wish, to basically say that she doesn't want her wish anymore. And it makes no sense for her to listen to Diana at that point when she's making her speech about everybody, you know, love, life, everything, you know, around you, where we are the world, hands across America. Because that's what it felt like. Straight up, it felt like hands across America. I have a lot of fucking strong feelings about that last scene. But at the same time, like, it makes no sense for her character to have her wish. You see her full-blown cheetah, and then one scene after listening to Diana, she's back to her human form.
How did you miss that time?
Suck at my balls.
Yeah, you gotta go back and watch that, bro. Because honestly, that's kind of
basically Diana became the fucking president from Independence Day, and everyone is just
listen. You don't. My man had a very inspiring speech for like 12 people. Okay, like you don't take that speech. That's one of the best presidential speeches ever in film history. I don't give a damn
for 12 people. I'm so done.
It felt like it was like 12 people, and my man drinking all the job is you're like that Miguel.
Let's continue on, because I'm like, okay, so now that she's been introduced, is she here to stay if she transferred back into
probably not. That's the sucky part about it, because I think it was just
I thought the electric.
I got real.
I thought that part took her out.
I was like, bro, like.
I thought that took her out. I was like, oh shit. And I thought she was just going to leave her fucking floating like a deuce, you know?
I mean, DC has a habit of killing off villains. Good Zod. You know, a prolific villain like that. That just snaps the neck and calls it a day.
You just triggered me right now.
The screams.
Bro, I despise that shit. How you gonna end Zod like that, bro? I'm sorry. But just talking about Cheetah, most likely we won't, honestly, because we saw her renounce her wish, unless we get some reiteration down the line. But as of right now, I don't think we're gonna see her, because, you know, and it just kind of sucks, because this was a shining moment of the movie. There's different variations, like you said, because I know one of them got imbued with their power from a knife that cut herself with a knife,
yeah,
you know, from the last Amazonian tribe lost. And then to now her just destroying this mystique, like I told you, of the Golden Eagle armor. That Golden Eagle armor was irrelevant, bro, for the whole movie. Like, you built it up so big.
Straight up. You built it.
They could have at least brought it some attention in the first movie. And then, but like, you bring it up here, and then magically 10 minutes later, she's using it.
It really was. And then, like, 10 minutes later after that, it gets destroyed. Like, but
pretty much. Hordes of men and axes and swords are destroyed. She's just fine.
And here comes Cheetah, and just crushes that.
Yeah. Fucking just, you see the shit just flying.
Berserker barrage.
And then to add some more insult to injury, she just throws the wings off. Like, okay, well, I don't need you. Like, you're actually holding me back.
Let me also throw back to Zod as well, too, because this is a tangent that I love to hear as well, too, from fucking fanboys, too. Oh, it was great on Nolan's part, because it's for the greater good of Zod, you know, being... killed, like he was gonna kill a massive amount of people. No, he was gonna kill this small little fucking family of people, laserize them. Let's go back 10 minutes before the movie. These fuckers, which is beautifully shown in Batman versus Superman, the chaos and the 9/11-esque kind of destruction that's happening in Metropolis by both these fuckers, okay? There are, like, thousands of people that died because of their fight in the air in Metropolis, but we care about these three fucking people? No, fuck out of here.
Yo, bro, yeah.
Why do you think Ben Affleck's so pissed off in that movie? Because a whole city got murdered, yet these two fuckers are like, oh, thanks, Superman, we didn't get laser beams.
But bro, when you do stupid stuff like that, when you take out such a prominent villain, like you said, DC has this tendency, when you take out a prominent villain like my man Drew Zod, and you, it's just the equivalent of, you know, Professor Xavier when Phoenix killed him. And that's the vibes that I get, bro. Like, what are you gonna do now? What are you gonna do? No,
I just see that. Patrick Stewart out of his wheelchair. Exactly. This is what I got paid for. This one moment.
Suspend me in the air.
I can just picture him, like, obliterating.
Doesn't he get, like, a smile before he dies?
He does.
Yes! He's like, check this shit out.
That was unscripted.
What are those edibles do?
They just kicked in.
I'm so dumb, man. But that's kind of the equivalent of that. When you take out Zod, when you take out a cheetah, you make her renounce her wish. No, like, where do you go from here? And then, you know, obviously X-Men had to revisit younger Xavier because they fucked up. So, I don't know, man.
Or they ignored it completely.
Y'all leave him alone.
This said, fuck it.
Y'all leave him
Logan,
alone.
Logan, he's just there as a man with fucking Alzheimer's killing everybody, so.
Bro, terrible too.
Which I love Logan. Logan's fantastic. I'll give that a pass. But let's get back to the nitty-gritty with this movie over here. Cheetah, great. Were there other parts of this movie that you didn't like? Jake, I know you had a problem with the ending as much as I did. Go ahead. I want you to just walk me through the ending. How'd you feel about it?
So besides, I mean, like, again, it just, the whole thing seemed irrelevant at the end, or like, and I'm still thinking, like, did shit just go back in time, or like, what the fuck happened? Like, the whole thing with Maxwell Lord just seemed underwhelming and underperforming. Like, Pedro Pascal himself played that role phenomenally, you know, for what he was given, you know, for the script that was written for him, he did it well. But again, like, seeing it a second time, I realized, oh, well, this is just a Diana story. Like, literally, this is all that it is. So I guess the villainry in it was just very underwhelming, very underperforming. And then that whole end, just for it to literally, at the snap of a finger, like, it just suddenly is just gone. It's like, well, okay. Like, I guess that's it. We're not gonna die anymore.
We're saved. So,
yes,
this is the way.
We're okay. Ends across America.
And so, again, not every movie, you know, has to have that typical, you know,
happy ending.
I guess. Yeah. Superhero villain fight scene, you know, or like, you know, that epic battle at the end, because I feel like every movie's obligated to have that, maybe. And this one really didn't, and I guess that's okay. But again, with the choice of Maxwell Lord, I just don't think that was the right way to end that. And especially his story arc at the end, like, you know, he goes running to his son, and, you know, that was just a whole emotional moment on its own. But like, okay, so like, literally, we're just gonna give him a pass, like, is that it? Like, what? So
I was just,
go ahead, Jay.
I
want
to kick him out of the rabbit hole, like, that was gonna save him, daddy. Like, yo, you thought you were safe in there, but I agree with you, and it sucks for me because they did such a phenomenal job, Pedro and Christine, that it's like, it's just overshadowed completely because it's a Diana story. You know, like, we see him that he just started whirling around in this whirlwind that she couldn't even get the lasso of truth, where you don't see it go in, but all of a sudden, wait, how? Like, you know, and she's just talking, transmuting something to the world, and it sucks. Because at the end of the day, it's a Diane story. And are these people just going to be irrelevant? I feel that they are, you know, for the phenomenal performance that they had, man. Honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I just want to throw one more thing in there. Especially because, so, the other thing that I was hyping myself up about it was, again, I had saw the pre-screening, so and I can say, like, right now, not a damn thing was changed. And I guess that's, like, the point of pre-screenings. It's like, okay, what worked, what didn't work? And I guess the whole consensus was that everyone thoroughly enjoyed it, which, again, it's not a bad movie. It really isn't, by no means. It's not a bad movie. But I guess, you know, this movie could have been its own movie on its own, just with her issue with Steve. Just that whole movie could have worked out just like that, with just that whole issue, because since she's relying on her want and her desire as a human for that love that's already gone, you know, she's starting to lose her power. So, you know, that could have just been fine on its own. So why was it necessary to bring these characters into it if, you know, you're just going to quickly write them off? So that's my whole issue, and that's the one thing I didn't like. And in the 80s, I guess a lot of the 80s shtick in it was literally just shtick. It was just like a bunch of just, like, you know, shtick jokes and just, like, relevances just to make a joke and just for that comic relief. So that was the other thing about, like, the whole 80s part of it, was I felt like it was just more of, like, a pure comic relief kind of thing, especially with once Steve came on board.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. In the comic book industry, they call it one shots, and it's like, okay, this is our one shot title we're gonna make right now. It has nothing to do with canon. It has nothing to do with what's happening in the main stories. It's just a one shot. Read it, enjoy it, call it a day. And I feel like this is that type of movie. What I don't like is that you put Cheetah involved with this, since Cheetah is one of her main villains. You could have made this movie Maxwell Lord and then some other C-list character, it would have been just fine. But you kind of just take the mistake of Cheetah now, and we, like I said, we don't know if she actually took her wish back. I think she did, since she's back to being human, but we don't see it on air. Something may happen later down the line, I'm not too sure, but it's a little bothersome. You make excellent points about the 80s. I feel like the 80s were just plot devices as well too. I feel like the whole comedy aspect with Steve and his fashion choices, and then the art and whatnot, like, oh, it's a trash can. Like, I feel like they were just purely for comedic roles. Or,
hey, I love that.
I know you did. I know you did. This is my personal opinion.
No.
And then, of course, like, I felt like the whole, like, trying to do the whole Cold War scare as well too, like, that was a big plot device as well too toward the end, like, oh, all the nukes are gonna happen, you know, the Soviets are gonna attack us, we gotta attack them, we want more nukes, and I'm like, okay, like, all right, like, cool. But like you said, Jake, another thing with that ending is just like, all that doesn't matter. Like, the whole movie doesn't matter. Basically, we're back to square one with Diana.
She learned her lesson. I guess that's the only lesson
you get with Diana, but there's no character development from Diana Prince whatsoever. We don't know why the fuck. We don't know. Okay, first of all, now I'm going to get into my tangents, because we don't know what the fuck she was doing for 50 years besides working as a curator at the Smithsonian, okay? That's about it. But even in Batman vs. Superman, Bruce is like, well, what the fuck have you been doing? This is you in 1930. This is you now. You look the same. No one else has saw that shit. Everyone's like, oh, you're using oil of Olay, Diana. I guess you look fucking great. Okay. Hey, okay.
Yeah, that's Avon, babe.
Avon. There you go. You're drinking fucking Aquafina all day. Okay. Fiji water. Is that what's making you young and shit like that? Like, no one questions that whatsoever.
Because they all die, so there's no.
I mean, she's around for 50 years. It's not like she says that she doesn't get out that much often. But let's be real. Everybody sees her fucking face in the museum. Okay, there's cameras everywhere in the fucking museum. Okay, like, her face is there. She's not like fucking Clark Kent that puts on glasses and now you know he's not Superman. You know, at least he has something going for him. You know, she doesn't even fucking put on a hat. You know, so. That's like a huge thing for me. Like, there's no development for her character. There wasn't development for her besides learning her lesson. Even her powers kind of pissed me off throughout the whole movie. Like, okay, I don't know the length that lasso goes. In my fucking headcanon, I don't believe the lasso goes as far as you could throw it. Okay.
But it pulled a fucking Back to the Future. I'm gonna ride on the back of this.
That's what I'm saying. Like
time. She's like,
oh, like, in this movie, flight. There's no explanation of that. This fucking lasso of truth can fucking jump right into the sky, grab a lightning bolt or cloud, and pull you away. I'm like, all right, cool. You just figured that shit out too. So it's like, you didn't try this before. You're figuring this out as we are. So it's kind of weird. And then the invisibility part, like, okay, she has an invisible jet in the comic books and in the show as well, too. I get it. It is more of a joke in the show. And in the comics, it's explained that it's more of like just science meets mythology in a way, but it's only for that specific item. And this item could be anything she wants. So if it wants to be a car or a plane or fucking scuba, fucking Steve outfit, fucking like submarine, she can do it. But it's not like, oh, I made a coffee cup disappear so I can make this fucking plane disappear. It makes no sense whatsoever.
And we'll never see it again.
We will not. We will not. She'll never try it again. I know. See, Jay's probably like on the opposite end right here. He's like, fuck it. I loved all of this.
I love the story of the missing coffee cup, but now we know where it went. It went to the set of Game of Thrones. That's where that coffee cup went.
That would have been okay, like Easter at the end. Like, she's just home one day. She's making like a cup of coffee. She bumps into it and it breaks. Like, that would have been okay. That's a point you brought back to me so I could enjoy. No, we don't even get that shit. Okay, that's my tangent for that right there, Jay. Any comments on her powers or anything else besides that?
No, like, I mean, to me, I really didn't much care about the lasso or the longevity it has and stuff like that, because this is just me. I really didn't mind it, because anything that's like whip-like, I fucking love. You know, I love whips as a weapon. So that's all I got. I got, bro, whip vibes when she was over here spinning it, blocking the fucking bullets and everything. It just, I was like, all right, I'm all for that. The one that kind of did throw me off is just the invisibility a bit. You know, we've heard about it, but then all of a sudden you're doing it in a little emergency moment to get out real quick. That just kind of threw me off. Like, we don't know. Cause also, like, you were telling us, like, you know, is that mascara just a remote island, or does Zeus have it hidden and stuff like that with the powers? So that's something that I feel like, okay, maybe you should elaborate on. But besides that, I really didn't mind much the lasso, honestly. And that,
even Matilda spent time, you know, working on her powers. She started from like a marble to... It took some time, but how do you just jump from a coffee cup to a
And we know that she doesn't use her powers either, because even in Batman vs. Superman, she doesn't use that fucking shit whatsoever. But I mean, like, there's no point.
But I get your point, but this is things that if you add... The movie's already 2.5 hours, so if you add her trying to fuck... if you add her try to make a fucking cup disappear, it's just gonna... People are gonna butcher it. Like, oh my God, why the fuck do I need to see her make a cup disappear? You would enjoy it.
I disagree, because we're doing the 80s, and this is montage time, okay? We're supposed to just do Rocky montages.
That would have been cool, you know, but like you said, just have a little, you know, quiet ride in the back or something, trying to make the cup disappear and shit, you know? But people will be like, nah, I didn't need to see that and stuff like that. This is something that you can explore, like you said, on the HBO series. Have little Diana figuring the lore out, trying powers out in little clay pots and shit, you know, trying to make a crown disappear. I think it would be too long for a movie that's already 2.5 hours, bro.
Like, you're right, but for the same montage that we got from a man, Steve Trevor, putting on parachute pants and shit like
that, could have been the same. I got holding notes vibe, bro.
You could have gave the same energy to her powers. I'm just saying, like, a 1 minute of like, we're gonna do a montage and shit like that.
Push it to the limit.
Another gripe I have, this is my own personal gripe, this is just me because I built this up inside my head, but like, you know,
isn't that always the case, like Jason?
This is true. But her powers are from the Greek mythology, from the gods. Like two of her origin stories. Her first original one is that she's made of clay from Zeus, given to her mother. And then the second iteration basically is her actually being the daughter of Zeus. That's why she has all these different powers compared to different Amazonians. So little things like riding the fucking lightning or fucking turning shit invisible, that should have been explained from at least something from like the gods. Last movie, you got Ares, a big fucking fixture. She basically destroys Ares, the god of war. Don't you think the people up there are like, well, fuck,
Like, this is
well, no, here's the thing. No, he makes a fantastic point, because look at the whole thing with the stone. She's told this whole elaborate story of all these items that were created by the gods for a specific reason. It's like, oh, well, this is the god of deception. What was it? The god
yes. I want to see some Duke of Deception in this movie. Shit, is that too much to ask for? So,
I'm sure Frank. I mean, I'm sorry. We just chilling good, here. Bro. We just chilling here. I'm sure Val would have definitely appreciated if he would have. You know, as soon as she would have rode the lightning, you just see like Zeus's pinky just ride me, daughter.
Yes, like in her most dire of need right now. She's losing her powers, or she's trying to fight herself again. Like in mythology, Zeus comes to his children in times of help, in times of need, and it would have been okay to see a little godlike pinky, just a little push or something like that. Like, here you go, my child, something, or maybe like an eagle, like as well, the golden eagle, Zeus. That's another fucking parallel right there. Yeah. So it's like,
I would have preferred something the golden from eagle. Them. I would have preferred. You know what? Thinking about it now, I would love to see the fucking little majestic cloudy hand like here, right?
It's like, here's some clouds. Apollo's fucking chariot comes. Take it. Like something. Like, I don't know. It's just so fucking. It's so much like a Diana story, but it is.
We are.
It's like it's so much a Diana story, but not a Diana story. It's like. It's like in its own world. It's kind of like in its own bubble, and it's weird because they don't want to push the envelope, but they do want to push the envelope. Like, they want to make Diana be like this larger than life character, but at the same time, they don't want to explore other themes with her character. Mm-hmm. That's all I got for that. Anybody want to take the reins?
I know. I mean, those are phenomenal points, and I've been sitting on the backlash it gets. By any stretch of the imagination, I wouldn't say it's a bad movie. It's just things that I feel like they wanted to cut out because maybe it just made it too convoluted. Were they important? Yes, they were important, because it's kind of like cyberpunk. Like you said, how do you expect me to know this world if I don't know jack-ish about it? You feel me? So,
yeah.
I mean, there's still ways to explore it, you know? Like, they already said they might make 3, or is rumored to be made. So, let's just see what route they explore. I mean, I don't know.
If they go back to this, though, but here's the thing, like, comparing just the two movies alone, though, like, the first one was done very well, and the time that it took to build up the team and build up, you know, like, just the whole concept of, you know, that movie worked very well. You had 2.5 fucking hours on this movie, you know, and this is what you did with it. Which was really just like, it's literally a cereal from the 80s, which is like marshmallows and fucking shapes and, so, you know, sugar and, you know, dehydrated fruit.
It's a Mighty Ducks ending.
Into a fucking bowl.
It's what it is. So now you got.
We win with the power of friendship.
So I guess, again, that's just my only gripe with this movie. It's just, there was just too much. I think it didn't really seem relevant to anything other than just Diana. So, okay, and that's cool. That's what it was meant to be, but at least give us that. Just give us more, you know, more, that. I don't know. I guess again, there was just too much packed into one movie when I felt like it didn't need to be. Like, you could have done another movie with just a lot of the detail and the shit that was in this one movie on its own. But no, you didn't. You smashed it all into one whole fucking movie. And again, by no means a bad movie at all. And see, that's the thing. That's what I'm trying to separate myself from. It's just people are hating right now just to hate. Like, just and again, that's just all fanboys. People that are hating on this movie are just pure fucking demasculinized fanboys who are just bitching over their grievances of their... the travesty with cyberpunk and God penises. Knows anything else that they're mad about. Yeah, exactly.
A woman like that, yeah.
Like,
no. Sorry for cutting you off, Jake, but no, Did it feel cluttered? Yeah. Was it just a straight up Diana story? Yeah. So my question to you guys is, would you have preferred if the Themyscira Olympia Games and they would have stayed in that time frame a little bit to elaborate a little bit more on her? Would that have been cool?
No, because that beginning was fine as it was. There's nothing wrong with that. It really wasn't. What it really honestly did was just kind of set up the message for, I guess, an issue that Diana, to this day, still hasn't figured out, which is just, you know, herself. You know, she doesn't, you know, and it's just, but you can't blame her. I mean, she's a half god.
She doesn't even know that. Everything she hasn't even right explored now, that.
You know,
she's just a chick from Ireland that's not there anymore. She can't get back. So she's like, I might as well fucking paint.
Who knows like 30 fucking languages? She could communicate with everybody, but she still can't figure herself out. Like, I get it. You know, that's a thing. But again, that could have been explored more on its own. That's just my only issue. And now we had to watch Maxwell Lord's son suffer through all this shit.
Okay.
That was just heartbreaking.
I agree with that. I don't think there's a bad movie whatsoever. I think if I look at it through a lens, it's very much a one shot. It doesn't have anything to do with any other movie besides Diana's movies. I would just like stakes to actually mean something in this movie. I think the only person that felt like there were stakes was Diana, maybe Maxwell's son. Other than that, because like Jake said, he was like in the apocalypse at the end of the movie and running through shit like, well, this escalated pretty far. Like, fuck. But like, stakes weren't there. Like, you look at Maxwell Lord, like, irrelevant. It kind of is like almost a Thanos snap. Like, you know, the blip happened and everything's back to normal. But should there be some kind of ramifications? Fuck yeah. I think. No, he's not
even in fucking jail.
Everything's back to normal again. But this fucker did that shit. Like, and we don't even know anything about the Dreamstone. The Dreamstone was never fucking taken care of or resolved whatsoever. You know, fucking Cheetah's character wasn't resolved whatsoever. Everybody's just living in wanderlust, like an 80s movie. Like, yeah, Breakfast Club, fist in the air, we're done. Like, that's what it was.
So my question to you guys is, I mean, maybe why he's not thrown in jail and no ramifications? Because if you see when they refused their wish, they were kind of like under a spell. You get what I'm saying? Like, you saw the president wake up like, eh, okay, whatever. Like, after they said, I refuse my wish. My question to you guys is, so if it's just me maybe overlooking into just more, just kind of like setting myself up for failure, like Val, remember the part where they were sitting, Alistair and Pedro were sitting in his office, and he said, and he was like, I wish to be like you, Dad. And then like the little wind came. Is that something they'll explore down the line or no?
Is that what he said? I thought he said, I thought he wished for his.
Yeah, something like that. Like, I kind of wish to be like you or have like the success like type of shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Or is that, I mean, maybe, but we don't see this. We don't see this little motherfucker even recant his wish either. Like, there's some people that don't have a chance to say anything. Remember the chick that dies?
But,
when she's like, I wish all you Irish people go back to where you came from. And then she dies? Like,
yeah,
I think she comes back, but she can't remember if she can recant her wish. So all those Irish fuckers are going back.
So
she died.
Is everything reversed though the moment that
that's what happened? Yeah, because you saw when the chick, the Irish one, said go back to Ireland, then the dude told her, I wish you would drop dead. So that's why she dropped dead, you know. And like,
yeah,
when she was coming back, and then you saw like Val's biggest pet peeve was the fucking wall, and then the little I was about to butcher the word, but the little grotto it created, you know, the little channel, you know, because I thought about She's Out of My League, chasm.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So
yes,
like, but you saw the water flow back through it, so that's why it just went, like, everything just got reversed, like, back to how it was. That's the thing, you know.
So does that mean a good question. The stone's back? I mean, again, it we didn't get any of this though. It went right back to Diana looking at the dude that she
she better not fall in love with that motherfucker.
I'm just saying, she already done fucked him though. So like, she wasn't fucking Chris Pine. She wasn't fucking Steve Trevor. She was fucking this soulless body that was just there. Like, you talk about that Disney movie Soul. That's about this fucker right there. Okay, just traveling through the fucking nether realm trying to get back to his body. not knowing what the fuck is going on. He had a great time. His vessel had a fantastic time. Sleeping with fucking Amazonians, going in invisible plane rides,
like, snoo snoo.
Wearing parachute pants. This vessel was having the best time of his life.
Literally death by snoo snoo, man.
I was rooting for him. I was like, I hope they get together now.
No,
because
no, I wasn't. Nope, I don't want that. Nah.
Him in his luxurious scarf.
Oversized scarf, bro, man. It looks better on Chris Pine.
So are we going to talk about the ending? Because I have no idea what happened, bro. Like, I rewinded to that shit, like, 5 times, and I'm still like, I don't get it. Like, I don't, again, maybe because I don't know the comics or whatever, but I'm like, okay, so it's a reference to the armor, right? Okay, so...
Well, I mean, to me, it really feels like the shawarma scene from Avengers, where it's like, they talked about it in the movie, and now you finally get your fan service at the end. They're eating shawarma. Okay, cool. And it's a funny, cool scene. And you get to see Linda Carter, which is great. You know, the original Wonder Woman. It's fantastic seeing her there.
Yeah.
So you get to see Linda Carter. It's beautiful. It's awesome. Woman empowerment. But she also has ties to, you know, wearing the armor. And then where the fuck has she been this whole entire time? And why wasn't she even prevalent in this whole fucking shit that was happening across the world with Wonder Woman and Maxwell Lord? Why didn't she step up and whatnot? Where has she been? Why has she even made contact with Diana? It's been fucking 50 years.
She was shopping for pretty fucking dress she was wearing, bro.
She was like, Christmas somewhere.
everywhere was going haywire. I mean, shit was up
so
for
like, it could be something that they explore, but I highly doubt it because to me, it kind of feels like a feel-good moment for Linda Carter. Like, it really felt like a feel-good moment for Linda Carter, seeing, like, fans that love that original Wonder Woman series, seeing her there and seeing her with power as an Amazonian was a full, fun little thing to do. But if you want to think about it harder, as we do sometimes, where the fuck has she been and why hasn't she contacted Diana whatsoever? She obviously still has her power. She obviously still can help out if she wanted to, but she's been fucking hidden away or just been doing her own thing. So do we explore that or do we just let it be as a nice moment?
I mean, I honestly really did not care much for it. I felt it was kind of like you said, like a little cheap, like as you guys feel that the 80s were like a little cheap cop-out. I think this was a cheap cop-out, you know, since like I said, the last episode was 1979, 80s kind of close, kind of prevalent. So that's why I feel that, whatever. Now, the thing is, do we explore that? Like you said, we think about it a step ahead. Has she been lingering around keeping an eye on Diana? You get what I'm saying? Like, we don't know none of this. Will we explore this down the line where, like you said, a multiverse of two Wonder Womans or something? Anything? I mean, it leaves a lot of open-ended questions. I mean, I don't know. Do I care for it? I really don't. That's just my personal opinion. That's just
me. Here's the thing, like, you had a, now we talked about this as well too, and I know you gave me a lot of flack for putting shit in my head and saying this was to happen, but straight up, like, this was your opening to work with your Flash movie that you're making. The next Flash movie is Flashpoint Paradox, and we see Barry Allen going back in time and fucking up the universe, the multiverse in a way as well too. So this could have been your little introduction of Flash fucking things up and putting like two Wonder Woman in one universe, or maybe things are just not as quaint as it should be. Things are just weird. You even got that with the whole static at the in the credits, which was a little weird as well too. I get it. Maybe they're just doing some MTV type shit, you know, static, MTV, yada yada yada. But like, to me, I'm like, okay, maybe something bigger is happening here. And they didn't. I feel like they dropped the ball. Like, this is your chance to really, if you want to change things in the universe and kind of bring things together, here you go.
This would have been a perfect moment for him to just run into her. Like, whoa, my bad. Like,
yeah. Yeah, straight up.
Something like straight that. Straight up. Like you said, to cast these multiverse together, but they didn't do it. I think it was just a little cheap thrill. That's all it was.
Yeah, me too.
I have to go watch Justice League again. You know what? Because, like, This whole universe just seemed like a mess.
Justice League. Every time I try to watch it, bro, like it would just like freeze up on me or some shit. I just gave up on it. Yeah,
it's not worth it.
It's not meant to be. But the Snyder Cut comes out in a couple of months.
I would honestly wait for that Snyder Cut.
Yeah, because... but you see, I can't watch the Snyder Cut and not watch the first one and sit here and judge it. Like, you get what I'm saying? Like, I have to see both products and stuff like that to give my opinion. But yeah, so I probably will catch that, honestly. I'll pull a Jake and go watch some Justice League.
Oof. We'll see what happens with that right now. But let's give our ratings right now. Let's go 3 stars with this. Jacob, I'm going to go with you first. If you give this 1 to 3 stars, what would you give it? Okay.
I'm going to give it a 2.
Any reasons why?
I mean, again, the direction, the emotions that I felt, you know, that I felt watching it. I still think that they're doing, you know, DC very strong. You know, overall, I think she's a very impactful character as Wonder Woman. You know, the other, the acting, you know, has to go in. You know, Kristen Wiig as Cheetah. I mean, again, there's a lot of things that we just totally shit on this movie, but you know, when it comes down to it, again, it's not a bad movie at all. And the people that worked on this film, you can tell they did like a phenomenal job. So I'd give it.
First of all, before I give my rating, I just want to add a little caveat to what Jake said. They're obviously doing justice for DC movies, but just to what you said, Val, where DC has the tendency of just killing off villains. I don't know why. I just thought about Black Manta, how they did him so terrible in Aquaman.
Yeah,
like, that's a prominent villain, and you just really just obliterate.
But they set him up though. They set him up though, at least in the end.
Yeah,
you know. So you know you're gonna get a sequel with him.
Yeah.
So I agree with him. Huge Black Manta fan. Don't get it twisted. but at the same token, I feel like the story in that movie was really Ocean Master, mm-hmm. and fucking Dolph Lundgren doing one of his best acting roles in a long time as well too. So like, oh my god!
I still haven't seen that movie.
Go watch that. Go watch
now,
that, bro. Yeah.
Now,
like, right now, like, don't even give your plugs and go.
No, yeah, exactly. Just watch it now.
But I would give it. I'm probably gonna be the generous one out of the three. I would give it a 2.5. I'll give it a 2.5 stars because, like Jay said, it's not a bad movie. Kristen Wiig, phenomenal. She showed her diversity. Pedro Pascal showed his brilliance of an acting. You know, you can go from Everywhere, Mandalorian to this. He's so hot right now. Like, you know, phenomenal. Knocked it out. If you want to say that they were put into a position to lose, kind of like back against the wall, they still said, fuck it, we're going to knock it out. So that's what they did, even though it was a Diana story. I'm a simple dude. If you give me some nice action scenes, if you could get me in my feels, I'll admit it. I fucking cried because I knew she had to give her wish back. And you saw that. I was like, oh my gosh, she's going to have to give her wish back. She's losing her powers. And that part, I bawled where he was in the cut. I love you always, Diana, no matter where I'm at. And she's just running. I'm like, no. Like, I'm a sap like that. That's just me, though. I'll be honest. I'm a sap. So I enjoyed that. It was good. The beginning where we saw the mascara, that grabbed me. That was awesome. And it's not a bad movie. The action was good. The evolution of Cheetah. I liked it. I enjoyed it. So I give it a 2.5. Would I watch it again? Yeah. Some people are saying they won't watch it again, but I plan on watching it again.
Okay. All right. Good parts like Kristen Wiig, Cheetah, great. Pedro Pascal, great as well too. You know, Dinah Prince, Gail, she was great as well too. Chris Pine. Honestly, I'm not as high on Chris Pine as you guys, man. I really feel like The Man at a Time has been done better. Mm-hmm. This is my personal preference, and I feel like he was a little distracting to me, even though he was the main theme for Diana to get her shit right. Mm-hmm. I also feel like he was a plot device too, like, you know, the way to fly is easy. It's just air and wind, and there you go. I'm like, well, if that's fucking easy, I'm going to go outside and try it, okay? I'm going to jump off my balcony and see what happens. But
they're going to jump out pretty.
At least do a Facebook Live so we know if we need to call anyone or not.
Chris Pine, you said it was that easy, right? Where you go? TikTok.
Oh, hold on. Can we talk about how this guy goes from flying sardine cans to fucking state-of-the-art.
It was easy for him.
Why didn't nobody
it's
talk
his
about
gift.
That?
Diana said it's his gift, so that's what it is.
That's all you could do. You could fly.
Bro, that's literally like, what, how many years? Like 50, 60
well,
years
of fucking
technology?
I don't think it was his gift because he kind of failed miserably in the first movie flying, so, you know.
But suddenly he can fly jet planes and just like
Chris Pine, man. Like, I get why he's in the movie. I couldn't like. I know a lot. You guys felt very sympathetic about Chris Pine and that last, you know, those last words he gives Diana. It's still hard for me to buy into it because it's not really Chris Pine. It's not really Steve whatsoever. He's a vessel, so it's a soul. And I get it, like the soul may be there, but it's not really him because it's a lie. It's a fabrication.
So,
it's a fucking farce.
So, with your theory, one of the best movies, fucking Ghost, just crumbles within its
yes.
own because Patrick Swayze.
Yes, it does.
It's a
yes,
vessel.
Yes, yes, yes. It's a vessel. Yes, it is. Straight up. Straight up. That's what it is. It's a fucking vessel. So there's no emotional attachment right there because it's a fucking vessel. Casper, the friendly ghost, is inside my body making me do things. Cool. But like, if it was like, if he was like, came back from the light, from the dead, and he's like a fucking DC zombie, you know, some shit like that, you know, he's reincarnation, Egyptian shit. Cool. All right, got the body. Yeah, straight up, you know, knocks on the moon. Like, if that shit happened, then I would buy into it because then he would be like, Thanos snap, wither away. Okay, I get it, but it's not that. It's just like, love you forever, Diana. I'm back to being this long-haired fucking goon again. What's up? You hot, mommy? How great would it have been?
Can you
imagine?
Right.
Exactly.
That man must have been. Like, he's just like in the middle
straight
of
up,
like
what the fuck is going on right now? Yeah, like, and it's
and then he not only once but twice because after
well,
everything
it,
goes back
he's
to
in the
normal.
Same place that where she left him, honestly. Because remember, he pops out of a corner in the pillar and he's like a.
Maybe he's just been passed up.
Because it's in the same corner, just left.
He was probably the drunk guy number two in the cast, like in the credits.
So, like, I don't have the emotional attachment like you guys have it because I just see it as a vessel. So, and I feel very weird about Diana because Diana should know that shit too. Like, she's not really with Steve. She's with a person that has Steve mannerisms. And maybe to her, like, it looks like Steve and sounds like Steve, but it's not Steve whatsoever. So I feel like in a real world atmosphere, you're kind of fucked up, Diana. You're taking advantage of this fucker right here. So whatever. But...
So I'm guessing Frank's not a big fan of Steve in Blue's Clues. He was either a Josh or
a big Joe fan. You're a Joe fan. Joe doesn't get enough love. But I thought the villains were great. I thought most of the themes were pretty fun. The lack of Greek mythology kind of killed me a little bit in this movie. The lack of development from Diana kind of killed me in this movie. But if I look at this as a one-shot, that's the only way I can look at this. Like, it has nothing to do with the next movies coming or the previous movies. It's just, here's Diana, here's a movie, there you go. I give it a two.
Will this be considered a one-shot, though? Because I know everywhere I've said this is a sequel to the first one.
I mean, yeah.
Well, but it's not titled as a sequel. It's titled as Wonder Woman 1984. You know, so with just the title itself, I mean, you can kind of look at it that way. It's not called Wonder Woman the sequel or Wonder Woman 2. Or like an overlapping W, Wonder Woman.
As
squared.
Yes, I could see it as a successful sequel. As a one-shot, not moving the plot of the ultimate multiverse story or the extended DCU story, I see it as a one-shot, and I could enjoy it for that alone. Like, if we came out with fucking Robert Pattinson, Peterson's whatever his fucking name is, his Batman movie coming up, like, I'm looking at that as a one-shot. I'm looking at that as you're still trying to use Ben Affleck in a couple of movies that are coming out this year. and you're trying to do your own Batman movie as well too. So it's like, well, one of them has to be a one shot. So I'm going to enjoy for that reason alone. This right here, the same way. It's a one shot. I enjoy it. Just like Joker. Joker is a one shot. You're not going to revisit Joaquin Phoenix as a Joker. It would make no sense to do that whatsoever. But this movie, the themes, which are happening in the 80s and her story there. Yeah, I'm just looking at that. So I give it a 2. I enjoyed it. I would watch it again. But I still believe that that first one, not because it's the first, but I feel like the first movie has a lot more themes to play around with. And it means more. And with Patty Jenkins as well too, like, you know, she's a director that really, she knows how to capture moments. For you guys, she captured that moment with Steve. So I get that. All right, maybe she got you there.
No, my moment was with Maxwell Lord and his son, you know, and that was going back to him again and seeing his son out.
Yeah,
in
the power of friendship wins. But I'm just seeing
the different
director that has done a movie like Monster. Monster is such a fucking layered movie. Like, you can look at everybody's side and understand. You don't like Monster, bro?
No. That is a fantastic movie, but I don't think you can compare them.
Well, thematically, I'm looking at it like the layers of the movie. Like, she's a fantastic director. You look at Wonder Woman 1, there's layers to that movie too.
Yes, but yes.
There's only one layer of this movie. Like, Diana, get your shit together. Like,
yeah, no, you're right. Because like I said, you know, it's very disappointing after the fact that literally watching it after post-production, after I had already seen it in pre-screening, like, literally nothing was changed. Nothing, not a damn thing. All they did was, because when I saw it with the flying scene, she still had like all the ropes and shit still tied to her and everything. So, like, you know, yeah, I'm watching like the green screen and just her like tied to the fucking things and just like, and like, I feel like the only thing that came out of that was literally just like the editing and it did nothing for me after that. So I was a little disappointed in that. So yeah, you're right. I could see that. But I felt like, you know, even though she was a director, I felt like she may have been getting like pushed from,
I think so.
Maybe Warner Brothers themselves, you know, maybe they wanted to see more of a you know, compared to the other films. And I guess I don't know. Everybody's kind of seen, and I could be wrong, but like seeing DC as like a darker world, as like a darker entity compared to like Marvel. Maybe this was the color.
Yeah, Shazam was the color that Warner Brothers wanted and needed. And I love Shazam.
Fucking Shazam, bro.
All right. Before we give our plugs, we have about 5 minutes left. Jay, you have any last moments about Wonder Woman 84?
It's a good movie. Give it a shot, people. It's not bad.
Simple. I love
it. Don't listen to the fanboys.
We didn't rate it bad whatsoever. 2.5 is pretty good. So that's not bad whatsoever.
No, yeah, I'm just, of course not. I'm just going by what people were saying on the Twitter sphere. People were just, because all of a sudden, if you go check Twitter, Captain Marvel is trending. People are comparing Wonder Woman to Captain Marvel. What the fuck are you doing comparing Captain Woman?
Yeah,
I mean, Wonder Woman.
Captain Woman.
No, but it's a little bit infuriating because it's like, bro, okay, we have Captain Marvel. Cool, fine. Enjoy Wonder Woman as much as possible. That's it. Stop comparing. Yeah. Like, it just goes back to what you said in the beginning.
Here's what's pissed, and I guarantee I'm not wrong. What pisses me off is the same people that are comparing Wonder Woman to Captain Marvel are the same people who didn't dare give Captain Marvel a shot, and all they did was shit on that.
I
fucking
bet you
movie.
It is. And same so, fucking so that's movie. Why I'm saying it. You're not here. We're truthfully speaking, genuinely giving it a good rating, you know, because it's not bad. I just meant it for like the Twitter world, bro. They're just some dude said I'm never watching it again. Okay, well, don't watch it again. I don't care.
not affecting my feelings.
Exactly.
We got 3 minutes left, guys, so I'm going to give you the plugs right now. Jake, your plugs. Go for it. Where can people find it if they want to talk to you about Wonder Woman?
They can find me on Anchor, Spotify, and everywhere podcasts are available on my podcast, Anxiety Live. You can find me on Instagram at JCB_ALX. And the as well as chiming in on the fantastic pop culture fanatics on Facebook, trying to keep the thread alive and getting all the good conversations out there.
Sweet. What about you, Jay?
Find me chilling at the mascara where all the Amazonians like a king.
Ooh, yes.
Now y'all can find me on Instagram, which is SunEater1A, SunEater1A altogether. That's the number one. The Twitter handle is the same as well. If you guys like wrestling, hit us up. Val and I do our thing over there at Elite Wrestling Audio. That's everywhere on Spotify. Apple has a Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. That's Elite Wrestling Audio. If you guys like MMA, check us out as well. The Gamora Chronicles. That's on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and the podcast is everywhere. Apple, Spotify, iHeart, Pandora, everything, etc. I'm out there with these guys doing our thing in Pop Culture Fanatics. If you guys like video games, we just reviewed Cyberpunk, Val and I. Check us out at Lack Switch Gaming. That's on Instagram. And that podcast is on Spotify and Apple as of right now. So, yeah, those are all my plugs. Where can they find you at, Val?
You guys did great. Lucha Val Cisco on Twitter, Val Cisco on Instagram. Pop Culture Fanatics is on every podcast station imaginable, so go find it. You can find all of us there on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, as well as other fucking little sites as well too that want to try to copy us because we're fucking magnificent.
That dog is trying to get you up. Shut up. Get off.
As well too, if you guys want to engage a little bit more with Pop Culture Fanatics, please go to Anchor. We have a Patreon there. If you want to give 50 cents to $1 to $5, please show us your support on that side. Leave comments. Leave fucking disputing remarks, disparaging remarks. I'll take it.
Hey, we'll take the donation for your Wonder Woman ticket if you don't want to see it. You can just leave it on the Patreon.
And then with that being said right there, guys, go to the movies if you have a chance to, if it's safe to. Go watch it on HBO Max. Enjoy this movie and have your own conversations for yourself, as well as enjoy ours as well too. Guys, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining me today. This has been one of the best podcasts that I've done this year. I love it so much.
As always, bro.